I'm Lorna Blumen, Bullying Prevention Specialist and founder of BullyingEpidemic.com. We make every day Bullying Prevention Day. Today we're talking about cyberbullying and smartphones. Technology is a huge part of our kids' lives. Over 50% of high school students carry a smartphone, according to a 2012 survey by Grunwald Associates. More than 50% of teens have been bullied at least once on their cell phones on the internet, and cyberbullying is a regular problem for more than 25% of all teens. What's dangerous is that most kids don't tell their parents at all or wait until it's a crisis. Whether you're a parent or teen, we need to find the balance where social media is a helpful tool rather than abusing it or avoiding it. Hannah Masters, Community Development Manager for You Know Kids, joins us today to talk about a high-tech early warning system for cyberbullying. You Know Kids is a tool that helps parents monitor their kids' cell phone use and internet activity. Hannah's using cyber tactics to challenge cyberbullying. Hannah's also the mom of two teenage sons. Welcome, Hannah.
Thank you very much.
Tell me a little bit about how you got started.
Well, you know, I've always been interested in helping families, and my background is in psychology. I got a bachelor's degree in psychology with the emphasis of families and developmental psychology with children. And so I've always been interested in the family dynamic. When I was about 15 years ago, I opened up a couple of daycare facilities, and so I really felt comfortable as I was raising my own children on, you know, helping other families that either had to have both family members working or, you know, single mom families so that they had a safe place for their kids to develop naturally and develop empathy and have a good, safe place to come during the day. As my children got older, you know, I saw the family dynamics changing. I saw technology coming in to not only into my household but also, you know, friends and families. And a real light bulb went off. I went to a seminar, and I asked a question, you know, I'm curious, do you have any idea who your child friended on Facebook yesterday? And it kind of hit me upside the head because I was an engaged parent. I was the type of parent that didn't let my kids go to a friend's house unless I had met the parents. And, you know, I was always very, you know, some people call it helicopter moms or parents. I wasn't to that extent. I allowed my kids to have some freedom and develop some natural coping skills and things like that. But I did, you know, I did protect them. And I was blindsided by the fact that I didn't even know what I didn't know. And there was this whole world that my children were basically scampering around, and I didn't have a window into it. I had no idea who they were talking to, who they were interacting with, how they met these people. And so it became a real mission of mine to not only protect my children, but also educate and engage parents and teens about keeping themselves safe.
Well, I think you raise a really interesting point, because now that kids have their own smartphones and their own data plans, parents really don't see or hear any of the conversations between kids and their friends, whether, you know, their Facebook friends or real friends. And whereas, you know, even as recently as, say, 5 years ago, kids used to use the computer in their home. So parents had at least some opportunity to oversee some of that.
Right.
And but now it's completely hidden. And as a result, it pops out much later. You know, the problem is delayed and delayed. And, of course, kids don't want to call adults' attention to a problem they're having online for fear of having their online privileges revoked or their smartphone taken away, which is, you know, a communications emergency to a teen. So they typically delay until it's just a crisis they can't handle anymore.
That's exactly right. Yeah, you know, when we were growing up, we had the family phone, and it was usually one phone. It was in the kitchen or the living area, and our parents heard at least half of the conversation. They also knew who was calling, when they were calling. You know, we parents today, we don't have that. We don't have any way of you know, keeping a finger or keeping your thumb on the pulse of what's going on in your child's world. And beyond that, they're connected 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So if something is going bad, whether it's, you know, drugs or alcohol or bullying or, you know, or harassment from a boyfriend or girlfriend, you know, it follows our kids 24 hours, 7 days a week. So it's relentless.
Exactly. You used to be safe at home. If you had bullying, for example, which is obviously my area of expertise, you might be bullied in school or on the way home, but once you came home and you closed the door, you were safe. Now the bullying continues, you know, online. It can be 24/7. And the other thing that's dangerous about it is that kids can hide behind other identities. So a child who's being bullied doesn't necessarily know who their friends and who their enemies are. So the problem continues, even though a lot of cyberbullying happens outside of school, the problem really continues back in school.
It does, and it follows them. You know, I work with many schools, as do you, and one of the things that I hear is that a large portion of the physical fights in school originate on Facebook,
yes,
or with text messages.
Yes.
And so, you know, it's really important for us, and that's the scary news, is that this is going on. The good news is that, you know, there are studies done that say that if your parents knew what you were posting online, would you continue to post the bad stuff? And 80% of the kids said no way. So that's a really great thing to hear. It makes sense, you know. Right now, it's the wild, wild west, and they literally have no accountability. There's no parents looking and asking the questions and seeing what's going on. But once parents start getting connected, once they start having the conversations with their children, and once they know that their parents are engaged in that digital world, then they have to make a decision. They have to filter their posts and their texts, and they have to make a decision. Do I really want to have a conversation with mom or dad about this? Or should I just let it go?
Yeah, I think you're really right. And I think you raised two important points. One is there has to be a bit of a communication back and forth, a face-to-face, ear-to-ear communication with your kids, and a continual conversation about what safe online conduct looks like and where the boundaries are, both for your kid as a potential bully or aggressor and for your child as a target or a victim. And so that's part of it's a huge part and an ongoing part. But let me turn the conversation now to You Know Kids. Tell us a little bit about how does that work?
Well, what it does is, you know, one of the things that I do is I educate and engage parents and their kids. So we encourage them to come to our workshops as well. And while I'm having those workshops, they engage in a conversation that they've never had before. And one of the things that happens is when at the end of that conversation, parents understand that they need, it's something they need to do. They have to have a window into that world. And then the natural question is how can we do this? You know, a lot of us are what we call digital dinosaurs. We have no idea. We didn't grow up with this, you know, or digital immigrants. You know, our parents didn't grow up with this. We didn't grow up with this. And so we're the first generation of digital immigrants that are raising fully digitally native children. And so there's a huge, you know, some parents are a little more intimidated by it. But once they realize that they need to have that window into the world, they come to us and say, okay, now what? And, you know, my friend actually developed this tool that allows parents to have a window into that world. And what it does, it's You Know Kids. And what it does is it directly communicates with Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, this your child's Android and iPhones. And what it does is it brings in your child's digital world, not just what your child is posting, but also their digital world. So anybody that is talking to them or communicating with them, you have a window into that world. It filters it 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And in the event that your child is falling into harm's way, you will get a real-time notification. So the first time somebody is bullying your child, as soon as it hits your child's phone or their Facebook page, you would get a real-time notification and be able to be part of that conversation. Now, two things happen with that. Number one, because we encourage communication and open dialogue, because we want to enroll our kids and saying, listen, you know, these are privileges. Your dad and I pay for these things, or your, you know, significant other and I pay for these things, and they're privileges. And with those privileges, here's our house rules. And you get to establish, you get to negotiate, you get to have those, you know, make those rules just like you do any house rules. And then you tell them that because these are privileges, we're going to have this. There's actually two options. You can either get their username and Facebook and friend them on Facebook and do what is traditionally what people recommend because that was all they could do. or, and that's kind of invasive. It's not, for us, we want to have a partnership and we want to enroll the kids in saying, listen, instead of us having all that and going in there willy-nilly and going through all your text messages, which we don't have time to do, why don't we have this run in the background 24 hours a day? You can have the privacy that you want, and I can have the peace of mind that I need, because when things go out of bounds, I'm going to get an alert, and then we're going to have a conversation about it. And it's really about a compromise and really connecting families in this digital world.
What kinds of things trigger a your kid is in trouble type of alarm?
Well, there are about 7,500 keywords and phrases. We translate all the text lingo, so you don't have to constantly stay on top of their new language, Pig Latin or whatever, you know, we used when we were kids to keep our kids, our parents out of the loop. It actually translates all the text lingo for you. And with most things that you as a parent would want to know about first, bullying, drugs and alcohol, possible illegal activity, possible adult contact, you know, anything that if you were walking by your child's bedroom and you overheard and it would stop you in your tracks and you'd walk in and say something, those are the things, those red flag words that any, just universally parents would, you know, if you ask them, would you want to know or not want to know, parents say, yes, I would like to know. So, you know, and you can add, the system's constantly learning. There's gang jargon, there's, you know, lots of slang words for drugs, so that parents really can, it's like a digital intelligence. So what it does is it gives parents the information to do what parents do best, parent. And so you know your kids, and this just gives you the information to be able to nip things in the bud before they get turned into these tragic stories that we all see on the news.
Well, you told me a very interesting story the last time we talked about how your older friend helped one of his friends who was sort of being chatted up by, you know, by a girl, and things weren't what they appeared to be. Can you describe that story a little bit? I thought that was a fascinating.
Yeah.
And it's about how smart your son was in all of this, really. It isn't just about the digital monitor.
It really was. It was because we had this open conversation, and it's been on our radar. We talk openly in my household about people not being who they might represent themselves to be. The word itself is called catfishing. That was a term coined by a documentary that was done where somebody had misrepresented themselves online. And so there's also a TV show named that on MTV. But we've had open dialogue about this. And this was just this Valentine's Day over President's Day weekend. My son's best friend friended this girl, beautiful girl, and they decided to be boyfriend and friend in a very short time. And within 3 days over the President's Day weekend, there were 3,000 instant messages gone between the two of them, and they had just met.
Wow.
And during this time, my son had saw pictures of her and said, dude, I don't think she's real. And, you know, of course, his friend is like, look at her. She's beautiful. She's interested in me. You know, the same, you know, you're jealous, whatever, you know, teenage boy. What 16-year-old boy is not going to, you know, be flattered by a beautiful model looking? And actually, it was pictures of a model, an actual model, it turns out. My son actually, you know, confronted the predator and said to him, you know, prove that you're real. And the predator said, you know, Skype my friend. And the predator said, oh, I don't think that, you know, I don't have high enough speed internet. So my son said, okay, well, then take a picture of yourself with my friend's first and last name on a piece of paper and hold that up and text it to him. Just prove you are who you say you are and I'll leave you alone because I don't think you're real. And to that end, the predator told my son to F off. Mm. And that's when I got added to the conversation because an alert came to me because somebody used threatening language to my son. So I got an alert. And I was able to go to my son and say, hey, what's going on? And I also saw that he and his friend were fighting back and forth because I got alerts from that. And I thought, whoa, 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 these are the kinds of words that end friendships. And these guys have been friends forever. And this girl I know just came on the scene within the last few days. So I asked my son, why do you think she's not real? And he goes, watch this. And he took her picture and he drug it into Google Images and it showed us the name of a model. Wow. And I was like, okay, well, maybe it's just a teenage girl. She's red-haired. Maybe she thinks she looks like this model. I wanted to give her the benefit of the doubt. Then he said, watch this, and he took her profile picture. She was making a duck face, and he put that into Google Images, and it was clip art. And when I saw that, the mama bear came out on me, and I hurried up and went over to his house, knocked on the door. He answered the door, and he put his head down and said, I know exactly why you're here. And I said, it's only because I love you, buddy, and you're not talking to who you think it is. And so we showed him what was going on, showed his parents. I said, best case scenario, this is a teenage girl that's lying about who she is. Worst case scenario, this is a predator. Mm-hmm. And it turned out to be a 45-year-old man.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah. I mean, your son showed incredible presence of mind. Like, this isn't just because you had a digital monitor on his, you know, internet stuff. This is about the conversations that you mm-hmm. had with your son, that he had a level of thoughtfulness and knowledge to bring to bear on this situation that was unbelievably helpful, you know, for his friend. So that is an incredible story. And I'm not a big fan of digital monitors. I mean, you and I talked about that previously,
yes.
But I thought that was a very, very compelling story, really.
Well, and he had to stand up to, you know, he had to challenge his friend. And he told me, he later told me, he said, I knew as soon as that predator started cussing at me that it was out of my hands, that I wasn't in this alone. I knew it was going to be on your radar, and I knew you would be able to help me.
Yeah, that's
and it saved him, right? Because it's not his fault that his parents are engaged in this digital world. So it gave him a level of protection with his friends, right? Like, dude, it's not my fault. It's my mom, you know? And
well, kids have used that excuse for years about, oh, I can't
absolutely.
Go to this party. My mom, she's such a whatever.
Horrible.
Right?
Yeah.
So now just, right, exactly. So this just extends it one more step into the digital world, which is actually great. So
it is.
That's fantastic. So how do you balance having some extra knowledge without helicoptering, you know, without GPS checking and, your kid at every place and reading every word? How do you do that?
Interestingly enough, I think that's what not having this tool has created. In other words, if I didn't have this tool, I would feel like I wasn't being a good parent if I didn't know what was going on. And so I could just see myself, and my kids will tell you, oh my gosh, I couldn't even imagine if she didn't know what was going on, you know, because you would just, what if you missed something?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what if that one time your child put something out there, or what if you got really busy over a long weekend? I mean, this predator thing happened over a long weekend.
Yeah, that's
I mean,
amazing.
It was very, very fast.
And it does really show the intensity of the communications between teens, the number of text messages
mm-hmm.
that are sent between teens.
Mm-hmm.
1,000 in 3 days is, frankly,
3,000.
3,000.
3,000.
I mean, honestly, do they have time to do anything else? I can't. I personally would not have enough time to do anything. I couldn't, under any circumstances, generate that many text messages. But it does show you the intensity of the connection that teens want to have and are capable of having. What about over time? Can you adjust the filters as your
yes.
kids' needs change? And talk a little bit about that.
Yes, you can. You get to decide, because this is a parental intelligence program, you get to decide how little or how much you want to see. So, you know, I had shared with you an interesting experience with my youngest son, who's been on the service since he was 11. He's now 14. Well, when he was 11, you know, we really didn't want his friends to be using a bunch of swear words. When he was 14 and 15, that's kind of a lost cause. And he was getting upset that I was getting alerted every time his friend was using a cuss word. So they'd send a text or post something on Facebook, and I'd get an alert. And he would roll his eyes and be like, oh, would you stop cussing, you know. And then finally he came to me and he said, Mom, you know, can you please take that profanity filter off there? Now, interestingly enough, because I'm not a perfect parent, I'm learning just like everybody else, I said, no, I don't want you cussing. You shouldn't be doing this. Well, my son solved his own problem. And what he just started doing is using a texting app. The thing is that my service told me that he wasn't texting anymore. And
so
I
his
knew
texting
that was
app,
not true.
His texting app, just to clarify, allowed him to text through the app, so it no longer
right.
showed up on you
right.
you've no kids. Okay.
Right. But the system alerted me that the information stopped coming in from that source.
Mm-hmm.
So that told me something was going on. So I was alerted, and I went up to him, and I said, hand me your phone. And he's like, why? And I said, you're using a texting app. And he's like, oh, Mom, I tried to talk to you. I can't, you know. And so then we were able to have a more in-depth conversation, and I ended up taking it off. We have since closed that loop within the service as well. So he's kind of been one of the crash test dummies for the service. So now the texting apps are actually monitored as well. But it was interesting for me, you know, being in this space and really being an advocate, and we do have a real open conversation and dialogue, that I didn't get it. Even though I got it a lot more than I had before, I just didn't understand, and I was able to take that off, and it's been amazing.
I think it's a fantastic story of really listening to what your child needs. And it's, you know, it's great that he came to you too. And it's great that you as a parent also had the flexibility and the desire to learn, to say, wait a minute, I got this wrong. This isn't going to work this way. Let's fix it. And to reapproach your son. I think that is, you know, I describe the parenting during the teen years is sort of every week you learn something about, oh, I guess we need to do that differently, or, oh, I guess
mm-hmm.
we put the ball on that. And that is life. Teens are learning. Parents are learning. You know, even the simple acts of communication. I mean, one of our aha moments when my daughter was probably in middle school and started going out on her own and she would take one of our phones with her is that if you sent someone a text message, you know, if my husband or I sent her a text message or she sent us one, whoever received it had to text back okay. So you knew
mm-hmm.
the message had been received. Nowadays, a lot
right.
of the phones, you have the ability to tell whether the message had been received or open, but back then you didn't. So you began to understand the two-way flexibility needed. And again, the rules changed as the technology changed, as my daughter changed. So that is
mm-hmm.
about having this ongoing conversation with our kids, which is much more than just, it's not just about a software app. And I think the real challenge is teens do not really like being coached by adults during the teen years. They think they don't need adults anymore. They think, how did those adults end up in my house? They couldn't possibly be my parents. And would, you know, so they literally, they love you, but they hate the fact that they're still dependent on you. And they hate
yeah.
even worse finding themselves in a situation where they go, rats, I really need an adult to help me now. And so
for
when
sure.
it's taken out of their hands in the sense that when the interaction with the fake girl got so bad that
mm-hmm.
it triggered your notification, it just took it out of his hands. He didn't have to make the decision, do I or do I not engage my mom on this? And the fact
exactly.
that he trusts you is also huge, really, and very, very special during the teen years, where trust is, you know, pretty much at an all-time low between most parents and most teens.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's, you know, and that's why we are so adamant about not being a spyware. In fact, we can't be a spyware. They have, when we connect to their Facebook, they have an icon on their Facebook. They have an icon on their smartphone. So there's no way for a parent to say, well, I want to be spy, you know, use the service as spyware, because we don't allow that option. So we really encourage parents to have this conversation. And honestly, the younger you can have it, you know, fifth grade, when they're starting to negotiate for that Facebook page, they're asking for those smartphones for the first time, they will agree to anything. And that's how I was able to work with my 11-year-old. He was all over wanting a smartphone. He agreed, you know, to everything. And he likes to joke with people because I also had him clean his room and he had to keep his grades up. And I had already decided that he was going to get the smartphone. And so when I share in workshops his story, you know, the first time he heard it, he's like, seriously? You were going to get it for me anyway?
That's great.
You know? And so, you know, that's a great time to have that conversation with your fifth and sixth graders. They're just starting to use it. What it does is it lets them know from the beginning of this journey that you're not going to just throw them the bike and say good luck, or throw them the car keys and say have fun. You know, you're going to make sure that you help them ride that bike, make sure that they get the instruction they need to ride that to drive the car, and you're going to help walk them through this new digital world that's full of amazingly positive things, but the information can live forever. They need to watch how they're representing themselves for future employers and colleges. They need to stay safe. There are real dangers out there, and by having those conversations early, parents are able to establish that we are connected and we are going to have a window into that world.
I couldn't agree with you more. I think everything you're saying is absolutely right on target. Parents gasp when I tell them that they should start talking to their fifth graders and even younger about sexting and not sending pictures of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I say, your child may not be ready to do this, but there are 10-year-olds who are literally sending naked pictures of their body parts to other kids in their class as a way of saying, I'm interested in getting to know you. You know, when I was a kid, we used to say, do you want to go to a movie? That was our way of, you know, getting to know people. Our kids have, you know, ramped that up. But the problem is you need to talk to kids long before they would even consider doing it.
Absolutely.
And the other thing is, even if my kid isn't considering doing it, I guarantee you she knows somebody in her social circle, maybe not one of her good friends, but believe me,
mm-hmm.
you know, news travels too.
Mm-hmm.
So I guarantee you there are people in sixth grade who are doing that and even younger.
For sure,
and so
for
you,
sure.
And, you know, nobody, even adults, don't have a good sense of what could happen, how bad it could get, what that last, you know, that last touch of the send button could buy you. But the problem is that, you know, it can set off a wave that, you know, boys and girls need to know
mm-hmm.
that the minute you press that send button, sending a picture of yourself,
and
you have to rely, not only can you not take it back, you have to rely on the emotional self-control and maturity of everybody who comes into contact with that photo forever. And our
That's
kids
right.
at this young age, they have no concept that their relationships
no.
are going to break up, that people who are BFFs right now are
mm-hmm.
might really not talk to each other, you know. And in a moment of anguish, of the heartbreak of a romantic breakup, as our kids get not too much older than sixth grade, believe me, the pictures, you know, adults don't have self-control in those moments, much
mm-hmm.
less kids. So we also need to do a better job, again, this is about talking to our kids, coaching them about, you know, coaching them through emotional breakups, talking to them about, you know what, you may be breaking up with this person, but the challenge is to treat them like a decent human being even through the breakup, and that means, you know, having self-control. But why not put yourself, why you know, not keep yourself from being put in such a vulnerable position by having pictures of yourself out there in the first place. So
exactly.
That's a vulnerability
yeah.
that you're never going to be able to call back. So
yeah, it is. It is. And there's actually, sadly enough, a whole society or culture of predators that are only collecting self-published porn photos and videos.
Wow.
And so that should tell parents how prolific it is. If that's all they do is scour the internet for those photos,
that
and
there's enough out there, right?
That
wow.
there's enough out there that they're
wow.
exclusively, you know, that's part of their sickness. So our kids need to understand. And unfortunately, with the Amanda Todd, you know, what happened with her, the predator actually took the photo and then tried to exploit her. And blackmailed her and also shared it with her school, and then she moved, and then he shared it with that school as well. So, you know, there are some horrific things that can happen with, you know, that was one photo, one split second decision that ultimately ended her life. And we just really, as parents, we need to be the first ones to know. We need to be able to nip these things in the bud and be the first one notified, not the last.
Well, it sure would. It gives us the opportunity to intervene so much earlier. Because the Amanda Todd story, and, you know, I'm a Canadian and I'm living here in Toronto, so
mm-hmm.
it was certainly, I mean, it was worldwide news. It was not just, you know, Vancouver
mm-hmm.
news. It was not just
mm-hmm.
Canadian news. It was a disgraceful combination of factors that went on for multiple years. And so
mm-hmm.
certainly the genesis of it was the photo that she allowed to be taken of her And that is the central core. But you have to look much wider at the bullying that went on, amongst her friends,
Absolutely.
Amongst her peers, that adults knew about this. This is a kid who tried twice to commit suicide before finally being successful. By the time it has gone that far, it is almost impossible to stop it from coming to its, horrible conclusion. And frankly, I have no more patience for people doing candlelight vigils and, the football players on her team, at her school wore pink socks in honor of her. That is a bunch of BS if you cannot stand up and help a kid who is screaming for help and has been for 2 years. So
Absolutely.
It's a very, but if that central, triggering event hadn't happened, she certainly might have been on a very different path. All of these factors combine in, the perfect storm of sexual cyberbullying, non-sexual cyberbullying, and it's, honestly, an adult would be deeply, deeply hurt to have something like that happen to them. When you think, what are the emotional coping skills of a 14-year-old, number one?
Mm-hmm.
And number two, this is a kid who was asking for help. Why could she not get help from any of the adults or kids at home or at school that she was asking for? It's a bad question, and that's bringing me to the last question I was going to ask about, beyond technology. I mean, what do we both think has to happen to end cyberbullying and obviously the wider problems, but just restricting ourselves to cyberbullying? Can you talk a little bit about some of the other things that you think are helpful? We've gone over some of them already, but
yeah, well, I think really having a conversation is very key, and you have to have a candid conversation. And the kids, this is one thing adults need to know. The kids know this is going on.
Mm-hmm.
They see it every single day.
Mm-hmm.
They are either victims of it, or they have friends that are victims of it, or they go to a video on YouTube and they see all the horrible comments. They know that the cyber world is a very ugly, mean place in a lot of ways. And so our kids have a very good grasp of what's happening out there. It's up to the parents to really start engaging and having these conversations. And, we were speaking about Amanda Todd, and one of the most horrific things is that even after she had killed herself, there were bullies on her YouTube video of her with the flashcards, and they're called RIP trolls. They are trolls that literally go around the internet and bully after children have killed themselves. And it is just horrific. So our kids know this is going on. So we need to have candid conversations with them and talk to them about what are some of the steps that they can take. Well, one of the first things that they can do is stop. Do not engage. If somebody is mean or ugly to you, a lot of times what will happen is they'll react immediately, and then it goes back and forth, and that is what the bully is looking for. There are different types of bullies out there. And some of them, all they are looking for is a reaction, and then they look for support for other people to pile on, and that bolsters them and makes them feel good about their comment. But if they put an ugly comment, out and nobody likes it, nobody adds to it, or somebody says that wasn't very nice, there are things that our kids can do. They can take a proactive role, but they have to understand and have conversations with their parents.
Yeah,
for sure.
And I think also, you've certainly highlighted start early, have conversations with parents and your peers, too, about, is this okay? Is this the kind of behavior that we want to have? You'll have those conversations in teen language, not adult language. But the other other ideas that we talked about are intervening early. Now, also things like keeping kids supported in empathy. Those RIP trolls are showing an appalling lack of empathy for the experience of other human beings. And again, we have to start early. And now, so that kids understand that respecting the rights of others and trying to imagine what others would feel like. I think those are the kinds of, approaches and even programs and activities that we need to look for. And
sure.
I think the other thing that I've found, as the longer I've worked in bullying, the more we've all come to understand that underlying all bullying is lack of respect
mm-hmm.
for yourself and lack of respect
mm-hmm.
for others. So if we start early with our kids to keep them grounded in respect for self and others, it sets them off on a different path. And most of your bullying problems go away. And the problems that do remain are much simpler and easier to, you know, solve at a different, you know, at an earlier part of the problem. So
right, for
well,
sure.
Well, I'll leave this conversation with hope, but we certainly have a lot of work to do.
but we've got a lot of positive things happening for sure.
Well, how can people find out more about You Know Kids? What's your website info?
You can just go to www.theKnowKids, so youknowkids.com. And we've got lots of free resources, lots of infographics and ebooks, and we've got lots of information in addition to the tool. And you can try it for free. I recommend everybody try it. Once you see the information, you get reports that are really easy to understand, really simple to look at. You can see their top 10 contacts. And, you know, when my kids first started using this, I was shocked to see. I just assumed that their real world friends would be their top friends online. And they were all girls, not their boyfriends, their friends that were boys. So I was like, oh, okay. So the girls are really embracing technology. And so I was able to see, you know, who their top contacts were, how they were using technology, when were they texting. It was brought to my attention that they were texting at 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning, and I thought that they were just not, you know, they were just grumpy in the morning, and it was because they weren't sleeping. So I was able to see that, where their peak texting hours were. You know, it also lets me know who friended them, who were their new friends. And I'm able to then, if I don't recognize the name, I can click on that person's name and check them out and say, hey, okay, I see. I had a red flag when I was actually demoing and showing this to a parent group. There was an adult male, a 40-some-year-old guy picture. Then my son had friended him, and it kind of freaked me out because I was like, what is that guy? That's an old guy. And then I realized it was his counselor from school. He had mentioned to me several times. So, but it allowed me to have that window. And so I just, you know, I encourage everybody to try the free trial, have conversations with your kids, and really get connected to their digital world. It's imperative.
It really is. Well, thank you so much, Hannah. Thank you for really, you know, telling us not just about your product, but also about the way that it can really fit into a kind-hearted, protective way of helping our kids take their steps into the digital world in a way that really enables them to, you know, make the best decisions possible with backup, with adults at their elbow. So thank you.
That's
thank you
right.
very much. Nice
You're
talking
so welcome.
To you.
Uh-huh. Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.